his church in Brazil. He comes in and comes out very, very few times. I've asked him tonight just to tell you what's going on in his life. And we thank God for your son, Andrew, coming here, and Bruna. And what a blessing, and their little Valentina. And if this is Andrew's daddy, for some of you that didn't get it yet. And we are so thrilled that your children are here, and send more. Love you, brother.
This is, I think, my fourth time here. First time, I was driving through Montana, and I wanted to stop and practice some archery. So I pulled in to go to the archery place and walked in the wrong door, and that's what I... No, I'm kidding. No, when I heard that Andrew and Bruno were getting transferred here, I emailed him three times, because sometimes he can't hear his email. And I called him up and I said, you need to get over to this church here. I said, I know, you're a grown man. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm not your daddy anymore. But you need to stop by. No, I'm not. He follows God, not me. You're right, brother. But daddy can whine and cry and get him to do some things still. But the first time Andrew came through here, he was less than a year old. His mama was carrying him. That was a blessing. He is real obedient. He didn't get that either. He's less than 1 year old. Andrew went to Brazil. You were what, 4 years old? 4 years old. We moved down there and with 18 suitcases, rented an apartment so we could go to language school, and I became a full-time student. Went on a student visa in 94, and there's several things. God makes you over the years. God develops you over the years. And let me start off with this. I'm going to backtrack, and I just want to thank you and tell you that you don't have to avoid the subject of our daughter Anna that's in heaven. Because when God punches a hole in your heart, or when God shatters your heart and it falls all apart in his hands, I don't want him to put it back together again. I want him to hold it. No, you leave it broken. See, I need a broken heart. I need a broken heart. I heard a man say one time, you can tell when God's broken somebody's heart because sometimes God will squeeze it and the juice comes out your eyes. But I appreciate the fact that a man that I consider a better friend to me than I am to him would call me up and say, you've got to be here for our missions conference. I appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you. Through life, you meet a lot of acquaintances and very few good friends. And it's hard to be a good friend a long distance. The rest of you men that know him know that. All the rest of you that know him know that. But getting little personal notes from a preacher... some of your church members get that too. That's a blessing. So we get back on track now. Go to Brazil. We're in language school. Setting up the house and studying the language. And I figured my first mission was, because when I got there, I didn't speak any Portuguese except for that one. That one, I'm translating for you. That one. And by the way, if I slip and start speaking Portuguese, just make a note and ask Andrew and Bruno later. Because I'm not going to stop and defend myself. I'm just going to keep on going. All right? But full-time student. It was really frustrating. Really frustrating. Because I was learning the language and I was studying hard. And he was playing soccer on the street learning it faster than me. They had a little girl named Deborah. Deborah walked up and she loved English, Brazilian girl in our building. And she walked up to them and she said, my name is Deborah. Repite. And that means repeat after me. So they started calling her Deborah Repite. They thought that was her name. She was a little Italian girl. And so they learned. Just, it's a blessing because when I speak, I still have a little American accent, and I'm working on that. Been there 20 years, but you still work on it. Why? I don't want them to. I'm not trying to fool them that I'm a Brazilian. I'm not. Otherwise, I'd just become a, you know, change my nationality and everything. But I don't want them to listen to my accent. I want them to listen to the Word of God. I don't want anything to come between that. So during we were there for a year and a half, and while we were there, the pastor at the church that we attended, Independent Baptist Church, he was coming back from winning one of his 22 brothers and sisters to the Lord, trying to, and got hit by a young man adjusting his radio in a rainstorm that went across three lanes and killed him almost instantly. And his wife died two days later. There is no... oh, by the way, I brought a slideshow for you, but you're going to have to look up here. No, I'm kidding. I'm not good with AV stuff and all that. I'm going to have to hire somebody to do it for me one of these days. But I just keep it simple because that's who I am. I'm just simple. Language school, the visa ran out. We came back to the States. Brazil had an election, so everybody in the consulates from one political party left, and new people came in, and my paperwork was waiting in the interim and got lost. So a year was lost. We turned it back in again. It's great now because it's all electronic now and nothing has to be translated. But then I turned in 15 pounds of paperwork. And when we got that visa, we went in there, drove down to Chicago from Green Bay, Wisconsin, sat in that waiting room, trembling, my palms sweating, and the man looks out and the room filled up. Brazilians getting their passports renewed and everything. And Brazil is very anti-gun. And yeah, it's good up here in Montana, huh, where everybody's a hunter. Even little three-year-olds that go hunting, slingshots on the ants and stuff. That's great. I love it. But he looked out and he said, now, Mr. Matthews, the little hole there, you know, you come up like a bank teller type thing. Oh, they don't have that. That only in Brazil. They're bulletproof. But he looked out and said, Mr. Matthews, will you be carrying any weapons or any ammunition to Brazil? And everybody looked at me. And I stood up and I said, no, we're missionaries, not mercenaries.
Good answer.
But we went back, went down to Brazil, and a man had asked me to take over his work for about a year. And so I took over that work. I thought it was a good opportunity because if it crashed, I could dump it off on him anyway after I was done. No, I'm kidding. It was a good way. He was going to go on furlough. He didn't have a man that would lead the church the way he wanted it to. And he asked me to fill in. I said, I'll fill in for you for a year. During that time, Andrew and his older brother Stephen went with me to the church building to connect a plumbing job. And I couldn't get any men to do it. And I said, I'll do it. Young man, full of energy and zeal, and I'll go do it. And about half hour later, I was crashing through the roof. And then they put me on a, knocked down a sign off of the front out in the building, and put me on the sign and stuck me in what they call a combi. Who knows what a combi is? You know what a combi is? One guy. That's what they used to call them that here in the States too. It was back in the 60s and 70s. In California, they put big daisies on them, and surfers put, you know, they lived in them. And the VW van. VW van. Yes, I just sold it a couple years ago for almost what I bought it for 15 years earlier. They're collectibles. Collectible. But they put me inside that thing and drove down a dirt road and all the bumps and everything with a broken back and took me in the hospital. I spent 6 months in the hospital. Got out with a... They're great for a diet. This piece of plaster that went from here down to here. And we finally got our permanent documents. So we moved about 2.5, almost 3 hours directly west of there to the middle of the state. How many of you know Pelé? Did you ever get his autograph? Well, you said you know him. He learned to play soccer in our town. He grew up. His daddy worked in the train. His mama washed people's laundry and ironed clothes in that place. You know, simple workers. His dad began to play professional soccer on the small-time league. And then he would run to deliver these little workers' boots. They're low. They don't go all up your leg. And he would run and deliver them. And got trained and started his career there. Because he's rich and millionaire, known all over the world, he's ashamed of his roots, so he never comes back, but we still remember him. That city is a population of about 400,000. Folks from Green Bay called one time and said, "Now, how big is that little village you're in?" I said, "Oh, only four times bigger than the little village you're in."
Yeah.
my home church pastor comes down every 2 years, and we hold a conference. He brings down 7 to 10 people, and we go out on the street and do street ministry. And first time I ever went to Bauru, I put every of my kids in the combi. We drove from the city we lived in, rented a hotel, and stayed there 3 days. The last day we were there, I couldn't find a church. I couldn't find it. There was one 3 blocks from where we were, and I didn't find it. It was a convention Baptist church. In Brazil, it's just one convention. They haven't learned to split up like we Americans have done for generations, but they're just all one lump together. So we went down to the main square right in front of the cathedral and held a church service. And I kept rhythm with my knees knocking together. And we preached and sung hymns together and then passed out tracts. And a woman called my wife over. And she was pushing another woman around in a wheelchair. She was a nurse. And she said, Jilma was her name. She said, "When you write my name down and take my number down. And when you come here to start your church, you call me. You call me." So I called up my preacher. I went over there. They have a Walmart there. And they got three. How many McDonald's do you have here?
Three.
We do too. So there. And the food's the same there. It's not better just because it's in Brazil, because you want it to be. But we went to the Walmart and had a payphone out there and I had a phone card. And I called my preacher and I said, "Preacher, it's God's will." He said, "How do you know? How do you know?" I said, "They've got McDonald's, they've got Walmart, and they got the internet. It's got to be God's will. Got to be God's will." So we God confirmed it. I was 97% sure. And then 4 months later, I was 100% sure with no doubt. We moved. We didn't know anything about the city. We didn't know anything about how the city's arranged, where this neighborhood's a neighborhood where you're going to knock doors and it's going to be really, really hard for a long time because they don't need God because they've got the green stuff or blue or whatever color it is that year. And just started knocking on doors, meeting people out on the streets, passing out tracts. And one of my sons, I don't know which one it was, left a John and Romans hanging on the gate of a man. He called up, Milton called up and said, "What kind of church are you?" I said, "Why don't you come by and we'll talk about it. I'll explain to you." He said, "Well, what kind of church are you?" I said, "I will teach you the Bible as it is written."
Amen.
And he said, "How about if we meet?" I said, "How about tomorrow? Because I don't want that fish off the line." He says, I said, "How about 9 o'clock tomorrow?" "Fine." 8:30, he was knocking our doorbell. In Brazil, he knocked on the door like this. Because that will make the dog bark at you if they have one, so he doesn't come and bite you. And most people's doorbell doesn't work, so they're not annoyed by the Jehovah Witnesses and other people. Because they'll come and ring it at 8:30 in the morning when all the backslidden Baptists and the lost Catholics that had too much to drink are still in bed. Milton came in, and 3 hours later, after telling him, Milton said to me, he said, he owned two businesses. One is a trucking business, and one was one where he rented these big trucks that they pulled three trailers and carry sugar cane to the refineries. And he lost everything. He had messed up somehow, and he'd lost the love of his wife. I never asked him what he did. He was heartbroken about it, and she couldn't find it in herself to forgive him. He lost because of that and because of the bitterness of his wife, the love of his two daughters. He was just living under the same roof with those people and heartbroken. He had gone to the biggest charismatic denomination that teaches you to negotiate with God. You pay enough and God will bless you. And then he tried another one and another one, and he just gave up and began reading his Bible. His wife would get on him and say, why are you reading that Bible? You're not going to live it. So he shows up at 8:30. We marked for 9. He shows up at 8:30. Bruna, is that Brazilian timing? You know what we do? We start on time, our church service. And when folks walk in late, I go like this. That means you missed one hymn. You missed two hymns. You missed three hymns. We start on time. We start on time. That's not Brazilian, and that's not American either. I just don't want to punish the people that were there on time. I think it's just right. But when Milton got saved, he sat there on the couch, and he said, "You mean to tell me, you've explained this to me, I'm lost, I'm on my way to hell, and there's nothing I can do about it. What can I do?" I said, "There's nothing you can do about it. Nothing. Nothing. What can I do? Nothing. You mean that I'm lost, I'm on my way to hell, and there's nothing." I said, "Milton, you're ready to be saved now. When you realize you can't do it." And he turned around, got on his knees, and on his own, prayed for about 20 minutes and cried. And we had to recover the couch because his eyes and his nose were both crying, and covered that couch. Oh, what a blessing. And God said, "You see why I have you here? 4 months of banging on doors and nothing." Because we're in a neighborhood, you knock on the door, you get the gardener. "I have to work, they'll fire me. Take a track." Okay. But now we're on the poor side of town where those drug dealers are and everything, and they're getting saved more often. Guns and drug dealers, and they're getting saved more often. Yeah, ask Andrew about it. He's been assaulted a couple of times, once with a knife and once with a threat of a gun. I still haven't forgiven him for losing that cell phone I bought him. And he took that too. I called it. I called that number. I get him. We've been in the city of Bauru since 1999. As soon as I got my cash off and we could drive, we drove over there, set up, and met in several different places. Well, how many churches have you started? Four, all in the same place. If you move neighborhoods, you start over again. We had a nice place right downtown, a block from the busy avenue where all the streets come, where all the buses come from all over town. And then when God gave us the money, God gave it to us. I didn't ask anybody but God for it. I didn't send it in a letter or anything. And I'm not bragging on, oh, I am on God. And he gave us the money. I said, "God, I'll rent as long as you want me to. As long as you give me the money, I'll rent. But if you want us to be somewhere permanent, then buy this place for us." A pastor came with my pastor, and he said, "This is a nice building. I had just gotten the keys, and we had a contract to rent it for 1 year. And I was just going to renew it because it was a nice place. It was built, but it was a Methodist church. There was no hole in the ground to baptize anybody. They had a cup up here." And so God gave us some money, and we began to meet in there, and church started growing. And then I made a big mistake. I preached against gossip, and we lost 9 families. And the gossip stayed. That happened. It was tearing up the church. The gossip was tearing up the church. Just about 4 months ago, one of the ringleaders came back on his own, asked to meet with me, and apologized and begged me to forgive him. He's pastoring a church in his hometown. His hometown's 5,000 people, the only Baptist church in that town. He's pastoring that now because he got right with God. God wouldn't open that door for him if he hadn't got right. Well, one of the men that left had left his church, which was on the other side of town. There's one other independent Baptist church in our town. One other. Problem is, they believe the church is going through the tribulation. That's hard to get some soul-winning zeal if you just got to tough it out anyway. You warn people of what? And he came over. He had gotten angry. He didn't believe like they did, but it was other things. And he came over to me, and I said, "Listen, before you become a member here, you go back there and you apologize and don't defend yourself.
Amen.
And then come over here with their blessing." And he did that, and he helped for quite a while. I don't know why he left. He thought that I was accusing him and his family or something, but he was in that group that left. Some get dragged off. Some get dragged off when something like that happens. So on a good Sunday night right now, we have about 30 in attendance. We've got several towns around us. We contribute to a lot of other people's churches. You know, you go preach a conference and you see somebody saved there. What a blessing that is. There's some things. Now I'll give you the emotionally but low points, but spiritual high points. When I was there the first time in language school, my wife was pregnant with a baby that we never got to hold. And during the day, she lost that baby. At that time, when language school, I did not buy a car because our visa was only good for 1 year, and I didn't know if I could sell it or I'd just leave it there for somebody to steal all the parts out of it. So I didn't buy a car, and I was downtown. Well, she had lost that baby, and she continued to bleed. And I came back in that apartment, and the kids were playing quietly in their room, that was amazing, because I'm their dad. We don't play quietly. And but I looked down the hallway, and I saw my wife laying there. I thought, oh, God. And she moved. She had lost about half her blood, almost half. And blood in Brazil at the time was barely even checked for any kind of, and AIDS is a pretty scary thing. So my buddy, Pastor Claretti, went with me to the hospital, and he prayed, God, please stop the bleeding and don't make it so she has to have a transfusion. And she didn't. Exactly how he prayed for us. Exactly, word for word, God led that man to say what God wanted to do already. And so we nursed her back to health, and she had to choke down by cooking for 6 months. And the kids all chipped in and helped. You know, it's a blessing to me. I told Andrew this. I said, there's something I'm inclined to be envious of, but I rejoice in it, that you have that I don't have. And that's, you have siblings that are some of your best friends.
Yeah, amen.
Some of you know, some of you don't know. We have twin daughters that were born in the city of Bauru, where we are. A son that was born in the city where we went to language school. And who, Andrew might not admit this, but his little baby brother is bigger than him. His name's Caleb. Caleb, when he was one and a half, he had a hard time saying L's, so he called himself K-Bob. So his nickname's Bob, has nothing to do with Caleb. They were born there, and we moved out to Bauru from another city. Didn't know anyone there, didn't have anybody waiting for us. We just knew God had called us. After a while, we were there, and our twins were born, Anna and Priscilla. Priscilla's the youngest. Anna is about 15 seconds. They were the only cesarean ones, and she was in the front, so she was born first. And one day we were taking ticks off I wasn't there. I was in the front of the house doing some study. They were taking ticks off the dog. There was an infestation of ticks in our part of the city. They were all over the place. And you'd pick them off the dog every day. And we'd smash them and rub them in the ground and everything. And the veterinarian said, you have to burn them. You cannot just smash them because the blood that's in the tick that's holding up has eggs and they'll just grow. He said, you got to burn them. So my wife and the other kids, they put some matches sticks on the ground, poured some alcohol on it, and lit that and had a fire that big. And they're picking the ticks and throwing them on there. And Anna was over playing and messing with something, and she backed up and was wearing synthetic clothing, all except for her underwear was cotton. And that caught fire. I heard some screams. I thought, man, maybe they might be playing. When I heard a scream again and I heard my wife scream, I got up and ran. When I came around to turn, I saw the look of that face, that little girl, is on fire. Breaks my heart. Not you know, it bothered me emotionally, but the pain that she had endured. The skinny little girl, but the fat in her body was burning. Andrew had picked up a bucket of water and thrown it. And that water splashed on her, and the cotton clothing that she had on was the only place on her body she was not burned. My wife picked up a blanket and tried to wrap it around her. And the blanket started to catch fire, and she pulled it off, and I dove up and rolled. My wife has a disfigured hand. Excuse me. God's good. I should be rejoicing when I run into her again. We're going to see her again. She's going to be able to tell us what heaven's about because she's been there before us. My wife called the ambulance and they hung up on her. Called again and they said, "Now, what's your address?" Because they thought it was a prank call. And we're waiting for the ambulance. They finally get there. They haul her to the emergency room and say, "No, take her over to the state hospital. They've got a burn ward there. The best one in that region is right there." So they took her over there. They're on the way over there. And I walked in and said, "Where are they taking her? What's the address?" And there's this woman sitting back in there. Got typical government worker. "Oh, here we got a crunchy one in here now. She kind of crunchy. Oh, man, I wanted to." If somebody gave me her address, I still would be tempted to go in there and... Well, we went over to the hospital and we began to pray. And we didn't think she was going to make it through the night. She wouldn't have if Andrew hadn't thrown that bucket of water. There's no way you're going to live with your skin can't breathe. But the heat, eventually we realized that the heat was so bad that it had almost destroyed her internal organs. And she wasn't going to live. She lived 14 days in the hospital. Finally, when we weren't there, unhooked the tubes. But you know what? Those are 14 days of pain, but 14 days of glorious fellowship with our little girl. Every day, they let us go in 2 times a day. We'd go in there and read the Bible to her. She was around 7. And she hadn't hit that age where she was convinced that she was a sinner and felt guilty before God yet. Each one of my children, some were saved younger, some were saved older. Some were saved at 12, some were saved at 4 and a half. In fact, one of my sons is an Air Force guy, I think got saved here. We were driving through one time. Daniel. I'm pretty sure it was here that he got saved. And I told her, I said, "Now listen. I said, you get scared. Jesus is right here." For a while, we didn't even know if she could hear us because she was in a coma. And one day, we went in there, and I saw 2 things happen that day that made me rejoice because we knew we could get a hold of our daughter. The first thing is her kidneys had shut down, and that means you're dead in just hours. We went in there, and I saw that bag that was the catheter bag, and it was yellow. And I had never rejoiced for urine in my life, and I did that day. You will thank God for anything. But you know, in everything give thanks means that. I mean, if you're going to claim that you believe the Bible, then believe every word of it, or get rid of it. And what happened when Anna got hauled off to the hospital, she went to the emergency room, God took over, we all went into the family room, and I said, "We need to pray." We got down on our knees, and I said, "Now listen, let's pray, and you guys, you just pour out your hearts to God." And I began to pray first, and I said, and I didn't think of these words. God gave them to me. I said, "God, I don't like this. I don't understand this, but thank you. By faith, I'm thanking you. I don't know why. I don't know why. I do not know why." I don't know how many people have been saved because she's died, but I know God doesn't sacrifice your children just to get other people saved. They are not sacrificial lambs. they are precious in His sight. It may have been because I prayed before I had any children, God, if I have a child, and that child may never receive You, would You take their life before they pass the limit? Maybe God took her innocence. But praise God, she's in heaven, and I'm going to see her again. At her funeral, we had the biggest crowd we've ever had. Somebody counted, said there was 300 or more. Our auditorium seats about 80, maximum. And we're talking about skinny Brazilians, not us, portly Americans. I remember looking out, and there was a woman I'd never seen before. Sitting over on this side, and when I gave the invitation, she raised her hand saying she was receiving Christ and smiled at me. And smiled at me. And she was trusting Christ. What a blessing. What a blessing. The comfort that's come over that and the pain, and I don't avoid it. I'm not going to run. Comfort is not living without pain. We need a broken heart. And I know God didn't use in the sense of use. He uses all of us if we put ourselves in His hand. But He didn't use my daughter to get at me. God's not a bully. He did what was best for her because He loved her. I trust Him. I don't know the whole story. But I'm going to sit down one day and she's going to say, Daddy, it was worth it all. She may not call me Daddy. She may say, Brother Rick, it was worth it all. It is worth it all. If I had to do it all over again, I'd do it all over again. Every bit of it. Every bit of it. Because now, I know that I can walk around. I've never asked God, make the pain go away. Make the pain. I ask God, make her pain go away. You know, if You can do this, I'll go where she is. I'll lay there in burns. I never said that when my wife was giving birth to our children, though. Never. I said, God help her. And help me. Her fingernails hurt. But that created a tender spirit. A tender spirit in our church for quite a time until somebody got gossip. The devil's always going to work. The devil's always going to work. The devil's always at work. Well, I want to thank you for your time, and we got a preacher. You're going to be preaching tonight? Thank you for coming. Thank you for the work that you're doing. I just met you today, and other folks that are here, missionary here. I don't know what a missionary is. I covered the Bible from cover to cover, and I haven't found the word missionary. I'm an evangelist that's pastoring. That's the only way I can find it. I'm an evangelist that's pastoring. We've got a ministry in two and up to eight prisons, two that I go to regularly, and sometimes hold evangelistic campaigns in eight in our region. Have a ministry in a couple other states where I help a couple other an American missionary and several friends that are Brazilian pastors and missionaries. We go regularly every other year. Andrew got to go on one of those trips. He got to be bit by exotic insects and eat exotic fruits that you've never seen. And if you live in a different part of Brazil, you've never seen it. They got a fruit up there. It looks like a pear, but it's bright red like an apple. And it has a seed in it that looks like a tiny avocado. That thing is delicious. It's called the jambo. There's some things down there. My dad, who's lost. If I was to ask for a prayer request, I said, please pray for my dad. His name's Richard also. Richard Stevenson, not also. And he, all my life, he's been an unbeliever. Believed that there was a God, but he thinks that God's his buddy. When I got saved, I mailed a letter to my family. I got saved while I was in the Marine Corps because a buddy of mine a co-worker. He wasn't even a buddy of mine. I didn't like him. Yankee from New York. My wife's a Yankee from New York. But we weren't married then. I didn't even know her then. But he invited me to come to church with him after he said, he challenged me. He said, he came up to me and he said, "You think you're pretty brave, pretty courageous?" I said, "Step out back. I'll show you who's courageous." He said, I'm not challenging you to a fight. He said, "Have you ever read the Bible from cover to cover?" And it pierced me. Just let the air out. I mean, that little pigeon chest. And I told him, "I'm going to buy a Bible and I'm going to read it." Shortly after that, I had a motorcycle accident that I almost lost this arm, and this leg went around this way, and I almost had two left legs, and I ended up spending 10 days in the hospital, almost got court-martialed for it. I thought it was the end of my career, but it was the beginning of my life. It was a wake-up call. I got out of the hospital, and I went to a Christian bookstore, and I said, "I need to buy a Bible." He says, "Well, what do you want?" I said, "Give me the oldest one you got."
"Yeah, man."
So he went over there and he found this dog-eared NIV and tried to hand it to me. And I said, "I don't want that." "No, I didn't say the one that's worn out." And I said, "Go over there and sell your rock and roll to somebody else." And I went and looked. I just looked in the cover. When I found one of the 1611, I said, "That's old enough." And I began reading that thing and going to church. And I had been burned by religion. I was raised Roman Catholic. I was an altar boy. I practiced my religion. I was not a hypocrite. You're either going to call me a hypocritical liar or you're going to call me a fanatic. I prefer fanatic. And I practiced. I was an altar boy. I did extra time figuring I was getting points with God and going to go to heaven. Great Pharisee. And I went to confession one Saturday and I asked the priest, I said, "I just confessed my sins and I left there. How can I know I'm forgiven? How can I know I'm forgiven?" And he said, "Do you do this, 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 this?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Go home and pray for more faith." On my way home, I said, "He's 80-something years old, and he has no answer to give me. Somebody has to somewhere here on this earth. God didn't make us and say, 'I'm hiding out, come find me if you can.'" So I went all the wrong ways. Jehovah's Witness, Transcendental Meditation, psychology, Marine Corps. Marine Corps is my last religion. It was my last religion. Semper Fi. It was. And I vowed to myself, I will not believe any other religion, anything, being convinced of a man. Never. So I bought a Bible, not because I wanted to believe it. Not because I wanted to disprove it. I just wanted to be honest. I was a cynic. I was critical. I gave the Christians a hard time. I'd tell them. I'd walk right up to them. A backslidden Christian having a cigarette, and I'd say to him in the Marine Corps, he hadn't smoked before while he was under mom and daddy's roof, but to fit in and be the tough guy, he smoked. I walked right up to him, and I'd say, "Are you a Christian?" "Yeah." I said, "If you are, I don't want to be one." I mean, just to get them. Just to get them. And reading that Bible, November the 15th of 1981, Sunday morning, about 8:30 in the morning, I'd been attending Independent Baptist Church that preached the Bible, and I was checking it out. I asked the 5-year-old girl, the family that kind of adopted me, to help me find the text. She could find them faster than I could. I'd say, "Where is that?" And she'd get my Bible and find them and hand it back to me. So I wouldn't slam it down and get mad like a 4-year-old kid. And that morning, 1 John 5:12. Rang out. And that morning I said, "God, forgive me. I've been trying to help you and messing up your plan. Will you save me?" And it changed my life. And it changed my life. 1 John 5:12, 2 Timothy 2:2, Acts 14:7, and 1 Corinthians 2:13 are verses that have stepping stones in my life. Acts 14:7, often almost all the time I sign a prayer letter with that. It says, "And there they preach the gospel." I believe you ought to be a spontaneous Christian. I believe the gospel ought to come out of you all the time, everywhere. I agree you ought to schedule a time to go soul winning. Because otherwise you won't. Because the flesh won't let you. But thank you for your time. I know I went too long, but I thank you for your time. God bless you. Love you.